This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome back to Little Gold Men, the podcast from Vanity Fair and Panoply that proves that award season really is a year-round event. I'm Katie Rich, the deputy editor of VanityFair.com, and I'm here with Vanity Fair's digital director, Mike Hogan.
Hey, Katie.
And Vanity Fair's film critic, Richard Lawson.
Hello.
Well, you can tell from my excitement that even though the Oscars are over and we are as excited as anyone not to make any predictions or talk about the Hollywood Foreign Press for many more months, there's still a lot to talk about. I think as we proved with the earlier part of this season, the seeds of Oscar season are sown really a long time before the awards, and there's a lot to talk about in what we're calling the off-season, basically between now and the start of the Toronto and Telluride Film Festivals in September, which is when we started this podcast back at last September. So we're hoping you'll join us for this broad range of conversations between now and festival season, when the whole rat race starts all over again. And speaking of the rat race, we're joined by Decider's Joe Reed today, who is one of those crazy people who's already made his 2017 Oscar predictions. And we will make fun of him a little bit for doing such a thing, but then also mine all of his knowledge about what's going to be happening throughout this year. And then from there, we'll talk about Midnight Special, which is one of the few, quote-unquote, serious movies that have opened so far this year from the director of Mud, Jeff Nichols. And then we'll do something a little bit different from going big before we go home, but because it's early in the season, we'll go bold with a new segment called If the Oscars Were Held Tomorrow. And now we'd like to welcome back our most frequent guest, Joe Reed of Decider.com. Hi, Joe.
I am so proud to be your most frequent guest.
Yeah, we are happy to have you. So as we've warned you, we've kind of brought you in to make fun of you.
That's
because
totally legitimate.
You published your 2017 Oscar predictions, or a conversation about 2017
sure.
Oscar predictions.
Leading up to some Oscar predictions.
Boo.
So
what a horrible thing to do.
We want to know what they are because, you know, we're actually secretly curious about what you're predicting. But first of all, why start now? Can you just not help yourself?
I think it's a few things. I've been, like, doing this kind of thing forever, and it's just one of those things that really gets me excited for the coming year of movies. Part of it is that after however many months of the Oscars, the previous year's Oscars, like, I'm so ready to talk about other movies. And this is just, like, the biggest bucket full of other movies that I can think about,
when
that I can sort of anticipate.
When you can put the remnant in the closet and just move
exactly,
on.
Exactly. And it's just like, I don't want to think about you for a while. I'm going to think about brand new things. And it's just, for me, it's fun. For me, it's like a fun guessing game. And I know that there is some sort of consternation in certain circles that it's prioritizes certain movies too much right off of the bat and, like, getting this whole conversation. Not me, but, like, people who do this, you know, for a living and get paid for, you know, Oscar blogging and that kind of thing, that it kind of narrows the discussion too much. To me, it's just fun. Like, to me, it's just, like, a good time.
It's the thing that made us look at Black Mass being like, oh, Black Mass is going to win 100
totally.
Oscars because we had been talking about it since March because we had seen a picture of Johnny Depp on set or whatever.
Right.
And people like us had gone and been like, oh, yeah, best actor.
Well, and it's fun to be like, you know, okay, well, the Oscars like this kind of thing. I wonder if they'll like this kind of thing. And, like, sometimes you're totally, completely off. And, sometimes you're like, oh, Charlie Wilson's War. How can that lose? And then sometimes
Jobs.
It's like, a year ahead of time when I'm just like, this movie, The Last King of Scotland, seems like it might be a cool thing for, like, Forrest Whitaker, who had never been nominated for anything. And then a year later, I can be like, aha, I saw that Forrest Whitaker thing coming. And it's like, you know, it's a fun little bit of
So you're right 10% of the time, but that 10%
yeah, but that 10%
great.
Of the time, exactly, exactly.
Has your average improved at all over the years of doing this?
Nope, it hasn't. And I know that I think, like our friend Nathaniel Rogers, who runs the Film Experience, he does predictions every year. He does them on April 1st or thereabouts. And he has a really good sort of philosophy in that it's just the odds are so against you of being exactly right. Then why not just sort of like take some fun chances and just like try and hit those really unlikely predictions? And I think that's you know, fun. I think the process of it to me is much more fun than actually getting things right. Like I very rarely, I don't even remember what I predicted last year, but it's just like, it's such a good way of getting me primed for the next year's worth of movies, particularly the next year's worth of movies that you're not going to see advertised, say, at the Super Bowl, where it's like all the summer blockbuster stuff.
Or that haven't been teased at Comic-Con relentlessly. I mean,
sure.
Smaller stuff.
This is my Comic-Con. This is where I get hyped for The Light Between Oceans.
Well, and you are a sports fan too. Like, I feel like you understand as well as anyone how Oscars can be sports. And at this point, especially when, like, no one's spending money yet. I mean, there's people being paid to, like, strategize for Birth of a Nation right now. But, like, it's still so fantasy-based that you can really kind of enjoy it right
Totally. And, like, these movies could be anything at this point. That's the thing. There's no, like, there's the stuff that's, you know, premiered at Sundance that we know a little bit about. But, like, most of these movies haven't been seen. And, like, some people would be like, yeah, that's why you shouldn't be talking about it. But it's like, no, that's why I find them so interesting, because they're such, like, there's, you know, it's the, you know, unpredictability.
And there's hope.
There is.
We haven't seen anything. Well, we've seen
our
a
hopes
few
haven't
things,
been
but,
dashed.
But we're actually optimistic and looking forward to these movies rather than sick of talking about them.
No, exactly. This is like, this is so much like the first podcast we did right before Toronto, when we were like, look at all these great movies we're going to go
see
before the, I mean, not that, you know, our minds were dashed after that,
but you know, when we still had high hopes for The Danish Girl or something.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Totally.
Hey, you know what? Alicia Vikander got that Oscar.
It's true, she did. So.
Okay, well, speaking of Alicia Vikander, she's going to be back. Okay, so let's caveat that none of these are set in stone.
Right.
We are not holding you to any of this, nor would anyone dare say they know what's going to win anything right now.
Right.
But there's this Michael Fassbender, Alicia Vikander movie that I feel like we should have our eye on.
Yeah, The Light Between Oceans. I think there's a lot of these sort of early Oscar predictions come down to like, okay, what elements do they have going for them? So Alicia Vikander and Michael Fassbender are the two leads. They were both nominated this year. Oscar, you know, so you know that they're on Oscar voters' radar, that they like them to a certain degree. It's directed by Derek Cianfrance, who has not had success without, like, Michelle Williams got nominated for Blue Valentine. I can't remember whether he got a screenplay nomination, but I don't think he did.
So.
And then Place Beyond the Pines didn't really do anything.
But Blue Valentine got that Harvey Weinstein, like, crazy campaign because it got the NC-17. So it got, like, more hype than is indicated by its low number nomination.
So he feels like a director who they might be ready to, like, give themselves to. And with this, like, it's a romantic drama. So it's – and it's based on a popular novel. So, like, those are all elements that sometimes – this is, again, sometimes lead to Oscar success. I will say, because it's a romantic drama – those movies tend to get a little overrated in the year ahead stuff, where, like, a romantic drama hasn't really won Best Picture since The English Patient. Am I remembering
Titanic,
that right?
Titanic, kind of.
Sure. But Titanic had so much other stuff going for it. You know what I mean? Like, Shakespeare in Love had so much other stuff going for it. Like, and that's a comedy anyway. So I think this could be a thing for acting. What I would really keep my eye on, the trailer has already been released. Rachel Weisz seems to have a really big part in it for being a supporting actress. And those are the things that I sort of look at and I'm just like, they're going to have a good time campaigning Rachel Weisz, because she's like, she's a mother who's lost her child. And like that, it seems like she could have a lot of really good material. And of course, we know that, like, in the supporting categories, they like people who have a lot of screen time.
Generally. Vikander knows.
Right.
The scuttlebutt about this movie was that it was ready last year. Right. And there was some thinking that it was even going to be at Cannes last year, and then they pushed it again. And so that could either be a good thing, like how they pushed
Carol
to get to make room for Blue Jasmine Blue Jasmine. But it could have, you know,
movie,
it was still a good movie.
Yeah.
Or it could be bad.
Right.
So we don't know.
Well, right now its release date is set in September. I don't know if I would put my bets on it staying there because September seems like, and like early September, so it seems like a little bit of a no man's land.
Oh, like they, during Toronto.
Right. So I feel like if they like it in some of the earlier festivals this year, if it does play Cannes or something like that, then they could, you know, move that into a Toronto premiere and bump that release date back a few weeks or something.
Let's talk about release dates since I feel like everything you're looking
that's
at
a big clue.
Is Labor Day and after, right? Like
almost entirely.
There are movies that have been nominated for Best Picture that have come out in the spring, Grand Budapest Hotel, Blue Jasmine, all that, but like
sure,
and
we kind of already know about those.
Yeah, and there will be this year, but if you're playing the odds, and that's what sort of these things are, you're sort of, you're playing the odds. There's that Michael Keaton movie, The Founder, that comes out in August.
Oh, in the Help slot.
In the Help the Butler slot.
And I have a feeling that they're going to want to push him for an acting award. And also, Laura Dern plays his wife in that. And those are the kind of movies where, like, great man has an idea and also has a wife. And, like, it's, like, depressing. Do you know what I mean? It's depressing and it's a little cynical, but, like...
But it could also be the Greg Kinnear windshield wiper movie.
That's exactly what I was
that's
just
all
say.
Flash of genius. That's also very true. And it's the guy who directed The Blind Side.
Oh.
So it's like, well, it got Sandra Bullock a nomination or a win, but... It was also not very good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Says me, in my opinion. But yeah, so most of it is. So you look for stuff that's opening in November and December. A big sort of red flag, or what's the opposite of a red flag? The good thing.
Indicator.
Green flag?
Yes. Yes. Thank you. La La Land just got moved. The Damien Chazelle musical starring Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone just got moved to a December release date, which to me sounds like an indicator that they think it's really good and that it could be an awards play.
I was saying before we started recording, I won't name names, but an inside source told me that it's, quote, a masterpiece, so...
Or that he hears
Yeah, so this is, like, fourth-hand, shadowy, unverified information. But
even just from the
title... And possibly campaigning, part of early campaigning, it to you.
Yeah.
But
that's a good point.
But that's also a sign that they think it has a chance.
Yeah, if they're already working people now, like, that's a really good sign. And it's called La La Land. Like, it's about L.A. Of course, you know, Hollywood loves stuff about Hollywood.
Yeah.
It's, you know,
although the release date thing, like, I remember a week or two ago, this Mark Wahlberg Boston Bomber movie got set for, like, December 25th or thereabouts, and people were saying it's an award season release date, but that's also the American Sniper release date, and American Sniper got a Best Picture nomination, but I feel like there's a model there that isn't
that's
necessarily
more financial.
Oscars.
Right.
December, there's a holiday, a holiday thing of just people going to the movies.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Definitely.
So if Mark Wahlberg gets an Oscar, you can all tell me I'm wrong, but I'm skeptical about that one at least.
But then I would look at something like the new Ang Lee movie, Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk, which is about a soldier who's come home from the war, and it like, it's so Americana. It has to do with, like, halftime at a Dallas Cowboys football game. You know what I mean? Like,
well, some of these movies, it's like, why make them if you're not trying to get an Oscar?
Right.
Sure.
Right?
Oh,
I mean,
in
some cases,
Ang Lee adaptation of a novel, like, ding, ding, ding.
About a soldier walking around for hours. Yeah.
That one, the thing that has me excited about that one is Vin Diesel has a very big supporting role in that movie.
Wow.
And I don't know. You know, who knows? Like,
Is there a star in that? I know Kristen Stewart's in it.
Garrett Hedlund?
The guy who plays Billy Lynn is not an actor whose name I recognize and I can't remember it now, and I'm so sorry. I'm
supposed to be like Life of
Kristen
Pi
Stewart, isn't it?
Yeah, she's Kristen Stewart's in it. Yeah.
Yep. But Vin Diesel plays a soldier in that movie, and it sounds like it's something of a featured supporting performance. And like, I could see a campaign coming, you know, coming up.
See, now you got me excited, like Vin Diesel Oscar campaign. I'm
trying
ready.
To think what I'm going to do for Joe if Vin Diesel gets an Oscar nomination. Buy you something expensive,
a Groot toy,
sure.
But something about Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk that they just announced last week, I think, is that it's running at they're projecting it in like 128 frames per second or something,
which
is faster than it. So it sounds like it has a whiff of like the Walk, the Philip Petit movie about
or
it,
Life of Pi.
Right.
So, but it has this technical aspect to it that might detract from the story of it. But I don't know.
Yeah, and that's a very good point.
And it's going to be like an IMAX 3D. It's going to be kind of like a big
There are best case scenarios and worst case scenarios along those lines. And I think that's right. I think Life of Pi or The Walk is probably a good, like, either or.
That's a tightrope that you walk.
Yeah, so to speak. Yeah, totally.
Okay, what else?
So you've got a movie called Lion that is coming out in late November. Late November seems to be
which
like a real
I have
sweet
seen
spot.
A trailer for.
Already?
Yeah,
wow.
They showed it at Cannes last year. The Weinsteins do a presentation at Cannes every year. And so they showed trailers for stuff that came out last year and then also this coming year. It looks good.
That was the one where they tried to sell you on Jake Gyllenhaal winning an Oscar for Southpaw.
They
right?
sure did for about an hour.
Yeah, this seems like something. And again, so.
Wait, what is Lion?
I think this is another one that's based on a novel. It's directed by Garth Davis, who directed a lot of Top of the Lake, perhaps all of Top of the Lake. Starring Dev Patel, Nicole Kidman, Remar. It's about a child in India who essentially loses his family and gets adopted by an Australian family. And then when he becomes an adult, he goes to try and find his Indian family.
Using Google Maps.
Oh, is that it?
Oh,
yeah.
Okay,
Did Google,
right.
Did Google, like, sponsor this movie?
No, I think it's a true story.
Oh, is that true?
I think.
Okay.
Yeah, but I
is
bet you they got money from Google.
Right.
I know how this works.
No, they use Bing.
Right.
Yeah. So that seems to be, and again, like, not every movie that Harvey Weinstein gets behind gets pushed, because, like, we saw what happened with Southpaw.
Yeah.
But he's been somebody who's been successful with the Oscars before, obviously. So that's at least something where you know it's going to be on voters' radars.
Yeah.
So they will have the chance to sort of evaluate it on Oscar terms.
This is not related to anything, but jumping off of that, we talked about Birth of a Nation at Sundance when Richard was there. It got bought for huge money. Obviously, that's one of the big ones on everyone's radars. I think it's set for an October release date, like around the same time that Fox Searchlight opened 12 Years a Slave. Do
yeah.
I have that right? I mean, our prediction when we've been talking about the whole Oscar So White thing is that there's going to be a big push for movies with not all white casts for once. Is there anything else on your radar that you see kind of bubbling up in that trend? If it's fair to call it a trend and if that actually winds up happening?
No, and I think you're right. I think there's going to be a lot of pressure for this year to not be the third year in a row with all white nominees. You know what I mean? So I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on something like The Birth of a Nation, which is good and not good. Like, that's a lot of expectation to heap onto one movie. So
a movie made by a first-time director.
Right. And I think, again, it's you look at the release schedule and it's, again, you need to have voters willing to look sort of everywhere. So, like, there's a Tupac Shakur biopic that's coming out. Feels like it's shaping up to be a kind of Straight Outta Compton play. Danai Gurira, who is on The
Walking Dead.
And just wrote a play that Lupita Nyong'o is in on Broadway, plays Tupac's mother. So, like, that's a possible, like, supporting.
It's weird that Emma Stone is playing Tupac, though. I think that's... That was bad casting.
That was questionable, yeah. For sure.
But wait, Tupac's mother is around, right? And she's like a very legit person, I believe. I think that Tupac's father was a Black Panther and his mother's like a pretty heavy-duty intellectual.
Yeah. His mother's a real sort of staunch character, I would say.
And so this isn't just a great man with a woman in his life. This is like an actual interesting character.
Yeah. Well, my more cynical point was that she may be out and about and either kind of helping the film a lot by being amazing or possibly making it, you know, giving it trouble by being controversial.
Always a possibility.
But one thing that I think is interesting, and Joe, I'd love to hear your thought, is like, I feel like we see this a lot where something like Straight Outta Compton that's sort of new to the Oscar conversation comes in and makes a little bit of a splash but can't quite go the distance. And then a year or two later, something else that's similar, the pump has been primed and people are like, oh, good.
That is 100% the case. And I think that's what the movie is called All Eyes on Me, by the way, the Tupac movie. So I think that's what they would be counting on. I think also to that same point, all that push for Selma a couple years ago, and it didn't really get anything but the two nominations. You look at David Oyelowo this year, who has a lot of opportunities to get noticed, where he's in a movie called A United Kingdom with him and Rosamund Pike.
From the
director of Belle, Amma Asante.
And that's the first thing she's made since Gone Girl, right? Is that right?
Rosamund Pike?
Yeah.
I believe so, yeah. So Oyelowo plays some sort of royalty from a country in Africa, and Rosamund Pike plays a British woman who he falls in love with. And I think this is based on a true story as well. He's also in a movie, the new Mira Nair movie with Lupita Nyong'o called
Queen of Katwe. And that's a Disney movie. That's like a big studio release.
Yeah. So, and then he's in the Nina Simone movie, which has its own controversies and problems.
Again, Emma Stone, weird cast.
Again. with Zoe Saldana's getting a lot of flack for playing Nina Simone in that movie. Oyelowo is going to have, like, they will have their opportunities to make it up for him for not nominating him for Selma.
And that seems like something that's, like, the narrative that could definitely be driven this year. Like, it's
and he
time.
Seems, like, beloved. Like, he hasn't been around that long, but, like, people really want to work with him. And, and you know, I don't know.
Well, he's, like, isn't he, like, a very legit actor who spent a long, long time working on Selma and kind of has just... Yeah.
He also had that interesting statistic recently that he has worked with more women directors than like any of the 100 top actors.
Really?
And he's like, he sought out working with women. Like, it was an interesting thing about him that I hadn't really noticed. But then when you step back and look at his resume, you're like, oh, wow, he's worked with a lot of women.
He's hitting like the trend of diversity and the trend of women directors.
But I think sort of organically. I don't think he's forcing it, which is cool.
That's good on him.
Yeah, and Will Smith is going to be in a movie at the end of the year called Collateral Beauty that is directed by, I think it's David Frankel who directed Devil Wears Prada. I could be wrong on that, but I don't think I'm right on that. Which, that's another sort of end of the year, who knows? It could be
Concussion.
Right, exactly. It could be, but it's there's a lot of stars in that. I want to say Kate Winslet is in that one.
All right, so we could go on forever predicting how this is going to go. But wait, so what are you excited about? Like, what's like Vin Diesel Oscar campaign sounds fun. I'm up for a Rachel Weisz supporting actress thing after Youth. Like,
I love it.
What's the narrative that like actually you're excited to see if it manages to play out?
I mean, excited is maybe not the right word, but
we have a long summer to get through first.
Well, right, but also like, so Andrew Garfield is in a couple movies at the end of the year that I think could be the stuff of his first Oscar nomination. He's in the new Martin Scorsese movie, which sounds like it's a supporting role to Liam Neeson, although it's tough to tell.
This is Silence.
This is the movie that's set in Japan.
But monks.
It's
and
about
like
monks.
The 12th century, somewhere way back in time.
Exactly. Liam Neeson, Andrew Garfield, Adam Driver are in that thing. It's interesting to see Scorsese step out of the DiCaprio thing for a moment to step into sort of an interesting milieu for him. And I think that could be very exciting. Andrew Garfield is also the lead actor in a movie called Hacksaw Ridge about a conscientious objector in World War II that is directed by, everybody get ready, Mel Gibson.
Yes.
So that's another one where like the
Nazis win in this one?
I know.
It's like Inglourious Basterds, but the opposite.
Right.
Yeah. So Mel Gibson.
Emma Stone is amazing.
Yes. So I don't know if anybody is ready for the Mel Gibson comeback tour, but like Stranger Things have definitely.
But people
happened.
Are ready for Andrew Garfield. I mean, he was so good in 99 Homes last year. And like, I feel like talking about priming the pump, like this might be like time for him. And
when
that
I think
would be
about him not getting nominated for The Social Network, I still get mad about it. It's like surprising that didn't happen.
Yeah. No, agreed. And he's just great. So I'm curious about.
It's been enough time since Spider-Man that we can break
yeah,
him back.
I like those Spider-Man movies. I know no one else does, but
Emma Stone was amazing in that.
No, hey,
she was actually amazing in that. Yeah. I'm kind of excited for the Oliver Stone Edward Snowden movie. Although, talk about like a director who used to be like catnip for Oscar and has really, really become not that.
Was his last movie The Savages or Savages?
It was, and I loved that movie.
It's a good movie.
It's not a bad movie.
Salma Hayek should have gotten an Oscar nomination for that movie.
You know I agree with you on that one. You know I do.
But this movie also was supposed to open last October and got pushed like almost a full year.
Yeah, this is where Oliver Stone could go so right or so horribly wrong.
World Trade Center was the same kind of thing where it's just like it's, you know, all the stuff is there for it, but they just didn't go for it.
Also, like with Oliver Stone, you know, the thing about the Snowden story, it's so crazy, you could actually pull back and you just know that he doesn't operate in that mode.
Right.
He's going to go in and add more crazy shit to it that is not necessary, I suspect.
Yeah.
And also Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Snowden. Like, I think it was wise not to open it last fall when The Walk came out and no one wanted anything to do with it. So give him time to come back.
But also, interesting tidbit, Melissa Leo playing Laura Poitras, Oscar winner playing an Oscar winner, which is... You don't see that. You know, that's a tough needle to thread. So.
Yeah.
Does Kate Blanchett not count because she hadn't won her Oscar yet when she played Katharine Hepburn?
No, she right, because she won the Oscar for playing Katharine Hepburn.
All right, tricky. So, this is a hall of mirrors.
Exactly. It is.
I guess, Joe, we'll have you back in at some point this summer, maybe, and check in on how all these are looking.
Yeah, definitely hold my feet to the fire to all of these predictions and excoriate me when I am wrong.
I know. Well, I can't wait
We're excoriating you now
for
exactly. doing it.
I'm looking forward the Hurt Locker somehow, like something like that, something that's already come out that winds up winning Best Picture that we're not seeing.
Or a Big Short lurking that we're not going to find out about October.
Also that. Yeah.
No, every Oscar season comes with its surprises, but this is a pretty good starting point. So everyone should read your post on Decider talking about this, and we will high-mindedly say we don't like predicting the Oscars this early, but
certainly.
Obviously we secretly love talking about it anyway.
Yeah, I'm sure I will be talking about it on Twitter from now until the end
of the year. Follow Joe on Twitter. So. Yeah.
At Emma Stone.
So Richard, you and I saw Midnight Special.
We did.
From director Jeff Nichols of Take Shelter and Mud and Shotgun Stories, which I actually haven't seen. I don't know if you have.
No, I don't think I have, actually.
Yeah. So he's been a popular indie director for a couple years. This is like his big studio movie. It's with Warner Brothers. It's gotten a decent amount of advertising. There's a push behind it. Not like a Batman versus Superman push, but something.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it had a long lead up. They released a trailer months ago, and you know, it has a sci-fi adventure element to it that I think is marketable more than Mud was, for example.
Yeah.
Take Shelter had that too, but that was such a dark, heavy. I mean, I love that movie, but it was not like a crowd pleasing kind of movie.
Well, I would argue Midnight Special.
No,
maybe
it's not.
Either.
It's not either. But it has. It's like a mix of, like, you know. There's a Spielberg-y element to it. There's
a
Shyamalan element.
Vibe.
There's a weird. Have you ever seen the movie Mercury Rising with Bruce Willis, where he's protecting a kid? Miko Hughes is the actor's name, who was on Full House, who has autism, but like has the code to some secret military thing in his head. So it's basically him on the road with this like really supernaturally gifted child. It's that movie, basically, but with more of an extraterrestrial element.
Yeah, and it's got Michael Shannon, who's playing the dad of this kid, who's trying to protect him. Joel Edgerton is kind of the friend who's helping along on the
Which is a really interesting role, because it doesn't really fit the typical schematic of these kind of movies, where it would be like the mother and the father and the kid and maybe an antagonist, where Joel Edgerton is kind of this extra element to it, which I think is kind of cool, because he's a great actor. And
So wait, what is Joel Edgerton in the movie?
So Michael Shannon has this son who has these powers and this ability to kind of see things, that the son has been kind of picked up by this doomsday cult for a while. He's been living with them. It's like treated as their prophet. And then at some point it becomes clear they have to take him away from this cult and bring him on a road trip to an undisclosed location, basically. And Joel Edgerton is a childhood friend of Michael Shannon's, who he basically says, listen, I need your help. You need to come with me. And I think he's in there kind of as an audience surrogate. Like he's there to ask some of the questions that we don't have a way of knowing.
Right. Yeah.
And also as proof, like he has been so convinced by this kid, because they talk a lot about the kid's powers before they really show it, and there's a lot of kind of hinting and a lot of secrecy in this movie, which is, I think, one of the problems. But Joel Edgerton is kind of there to be like, look, that's how powerful that kid is.
Yeah, and the movie picks up very much in medias res, so it's, we don't get any sort of introduction to anything, really. So it just kind of, we're on the road, we're going.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're right, that Edgerton's character is like, wait, but what about,
And then Kirsten Dunst shows up eventually as the
kid's
mom.
Is fantastic, and it's really great to see her with, at first you think, oh, it's going to be this kind of like boring doting mother role, but it gets more complicated, and she gets as the movie goes, she almost takes focus from Michael Shannon, which is kind of I don't know, I think she's great, and it's exciting to see her.
Her face can just do incredible things. I mean, she's been acting a really long time.
Well, there's a couple scenes not to spoil anything toward the end of the movie where she's sort of in awe of something, and it's shades of Melancholia, you know, why she kind of worked well in that, all these sort of big
very different
celestial
character
events happening that she's observing.
Also, Adam Driver is kind of the antagonist scientist role.
Yeah.
He's like working with the government is also after this kid to kind of try to figure out what he knows and why he knows it. And,
as the government always is.
Adam Driver, I feel like this movie proves that he has this ability to show up and you're like, why is Adam Driver here? He can't play this role, and then be great.
Yeah.
He's great in it, and you have no idea why.
Yeah.
He's a rising villain.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting because he's kind of a villain, but he's kind of not. Like, he's got this complexity to him, and like,
he's just interesting to watch. And he looks maybe a little goofy right in this first second where he's on screen, and then you kind of get used to it. And
well, it's like when we saw Star Wars.
Kind of like
at the
in Star Wars.
When people laugh when he takes the helmet off, but then a second later they're totally into it.
I don't know. I think honestly at this point I think he can do anything.
Yeah,
Richard, I think you liked Midnight Special a little bit more than me. It fell apart for me kind of toward the end, and I don't want to spoil it for anybody. But what sold you in this movie kind of throughout?
I liked that it traffics in a lot of familiar. I mean, you know, we mentioned Spielberg or Shyamalan or whatever. I mean, it or Mercury Rising, which everyone's familiar with.
Classic.
But it has a lot of these familiar storylines about, like, you know, man protecting his son and the kid is kind of special, whatever. But that because it's Jeff Nichols, it has a darker, sort of more indie take on it. I think that although we don't get much of it, the stuff with this kind of doomsday cult that's led by Sam Shepard is really fascinating and really, I mean, you almost want the movie to kind of turn and focus on that and find out what that's all about.
I would join a doomsday cult led by Sam Shepard.
I'm in one.
Yeah. Great.
Jessica Lange recruited me, actually.
You look great in your prairie dress.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, it's thrilling. But I like that aspect of it, and I think I also really like its ambition. You know, I think it's one of those movies that we're seeing more of as the years go on, where they're not huge budget, but they figure out a way to tell a pretty big story, and in some cases do some special effects, which arguably are the movie's weak point. But like, I like that they took on a lot and that it trades in some ambiguity but answers some questions. And I think that, you know, I think it treads the line in between sort of a big budget thing and a sort of impenetrable indie really well.
Yeah. Take Shelter, he famously, you know, he got Michael Shannon as this father who thinks the end of the world is coming.
Yeah.
And you never know if he's right or not until right. kind of the very end, sort of.
Yeah.
And this movie does a lot of the same, like really not giving you answers. Like it's not going to lay everything out for you. It's going to bring up far more questions than it's going to answer.
Yeah.
Which I admire, but also think hamstrings the movie a little bit toward the end. Like there's a lot, even in the very last shot of the movie, I'm like, I don't know what I'm supposed to think. I don't know like what I'm learning from even looking at this information on screen.
Right.
And I appreciate it, and I'm really glad that Warner Brothers funded this movie. I think mm-hmm. it's a really fascinating contrast to Cloverfield Lane, because yeah. that movie is a movie made by an untested director. It's an original idea, but it's being put together as part of a franchise and did really well. I think it'll be really interesting to see what happens with Midnight Special.
Yeah, I hope people see it. I mean, I think that it does feel more maybe like a genre exercise for Jeff Nichols than it does a complete movie,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, we see movies for free, so for me, like the kind of, you know, the standard of sort of entertainment is maybe lower for people who are paying $15 and parking and whatever. So maybe it might be unsatisfying in that way. But I thought it was just really interesting to watch. And I think that the opening shot is incredible. A lot of the shots within the movie are great. I think the acting, even the kid is good.
Yeah,
I think it's well worth seeing if you're kind of, you know, if you're, we got a week to go till Batman, Superman, so just wait for that and go see this versus, although 10 Cloverfield is good too, maybe.
Yeah,
you know.
I mean, I do like something that kind of pricks your brain and asks you to think about things and kind of puts you, like sends you off in a bunch of different directions.
Yeah.
And it does a really good job of that. So yeah, like you said, it's something that like asks something of you. If you're going to pay $15 with parking, like, you know, might not be your top choice. But,
yeah.
you know, if you come on, don't wait for Batman versus Superman. Like,
no.
We'll talk about that, but come, yeah. it can't be. This has to be better than that, right?
We'll see. It's more up my alley, let's say.
if you were collapsing buildings.
And it is interesting for the purposes of this podcast that Jeff Nichols has another movie coming out this year called Loving, about
yes.
Loving versus Virginia, the Supreme Court case that, you know, made interracial marriage legal in certain states. So
That Joel Edgerton is in,
yes. So it's like that director's having an interesting year after being away for a few years.
Yeah, it's been a couple years since Mud. So, Mud came out before Dallas Buyers Club. Like, that was part of the McConaissance buildup.
And it was weirdly dovetailed with Reese Witherspoon's renaissance, mm-hmm. the Witherspoonissance, I don't
yeah.
know.
The resurgence.
The resurgence, that's what it was.
It didn't catch on,
thank
but
you.
I'm bringing it back.
The resurgence. Yeah, so it's been a while. And I think that if he's doing two very different movies this year, Midnight Special's well worth seeing, just to kind of follow that little narrative.
Definitely a director worth following.
Yeah.
So as we discussed with Joe Reed earlier, we're not totally crazy enough to make our predictions for the Oscars just yet, so we're going to close with something a little bit sillier and, you know, maybe informative. Guys, if the Oscars were held tomorrow, based on what has already been released in 2016, what would win Best Picture? Richard, you've seen more movies than any of us.
Right, but we're talking about already released, not
yes.
stuff I've seen at Sundance.
No, this is just like the Oscars
boy.
Are being held tomorrow at the Dolby Theater.
Oh, gosh, that's hard. I mean, I would say this so far this year, I really liked 10 Cloverfield Lane.
I like hey, it's
Midnight
like, it's pretty successful.
Special. I'm suddenly, wait, help me out. What came out
so
in
my, so here's my
February?
Bold, here's my bold pick.
Yeah.
The Witch. A24 won three Oscars.
Okay.
They are on a roll. The Witch was incredibly well acclaimed. It's
that's
a genre
one.
Movie, but it's made really well. It's like had built up a year of goodwill. It's a critic's favorite. I mean, this is all imaginary, but
right.
The Witch would be my pick.
Okay, I'd go Hail Caesar.
Ah, good one. Even though it didn't do very well.
It didn't do very well, but it got good reviews. I gave it a great review, which is always the biggest predictor of the Oscars, as last year proves. And I think, you know, there's some great performances. It's about Hollywood.
Yeah,
that's
true.
And they like that, so that's what
just
I would
play
go
that
with.
Channing Tatum dance number on a loop for Oscar voters.
That's exactly right.
There's your win.
Yeah.
Mike, what do you think?
This is a movie that has already come out this year that's going to win
it's
Best
absurd.
Picture.
Yeah, it's
this
absurd.
Is, this is the thought experiment.
If the Oscars were held on Sunday.
Yeah.
Tomorrow.
I haven't even seen any movies.
I know.
This year.
I haven't seen
hiding.
The Witch. I'm afraid to see The Witch.
I refuse. I reject.
I said you could pick a
objector.
Conscientiously object.
You should pick People versus O.J. Simpson.
But that can't win an Oscar.
I know,
it's a TV
but,
show.
Come on. This is thought experiment.
Well,
time.
Midnight Special sounds pretty good the way
okay.
you guys describe it. So I think the Best Picture award goes to Midnight Special. Congratulations, Jeff Nichols, and all the whole producing team.
That does it for the 88th Academy Awards.
See you next year.
That That does it for this week's Little Gold Men. Thank you so much for listening and joining us for the off season. Please remember to rate us and review us on iTunes. It helps us find new listeners. And I think in this time when the Oscars are a distant memory, we need to remind people that there's lots of great stuff to talk about. And we will not just talk about Oscar predictions for the next year, I promise. You can find all of us writing on VanityFair.com. And you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Katie Rich. Mike?
Mike_Hogan.
And Richard?
Rylaws, R-I-L-A-W-S.
This episode was produced by Sam Dingman and edited by Tim Einenkel. And thanks to Laura Mayer and Andy Bowers at Panoply. And this week's award for line that could go on David Oyelowo's Tinder profile goes to Richard Lawson.
He has worked with more women directors than like any of the 100 top actors.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.